You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. I never meant cares about you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
I'm running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yeah. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope everything is good in your life. I hope you had a great weekend, and I hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, and it had to get done, it must be done, and you're going to do it, and you will do it. You will get it done, and you will do it safely. That's right. You will wear your mask. You'll keep your distance. You keep your damn hands clean. That's for sure. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland. Let me tell you about Motherland Media. That was back in Milwaukee when I was living in Milwaukee. We wanted to produce a radio program because the one that we were working with had gone silent for our community. Radio talk had gone silent, at least that station. And we decided to come together as a community. And we did. We donated money to it, put some money in the pot and so forth. But it never materialized. We were going to call ourselves Motherland Media. And so because I had kept that word, and I'll keep it. Motherland Media. Yeah. The Motherland. Motherland Media here on the timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific. Any other time around the world, of course, if you cannot listen live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. You'll click on that, and in the drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. You'll click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other program we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays from 6 to 8 on Monday, 6 p.m., and all times are going to give our Eastern times, is Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's going to be followed from 8 to 9 p.m. by Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with host Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening on Fridays. On Saturdays from 4 to 6 on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. At 7 p.m. on Saturday, from 7 to 9 p.m. on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And on Sunday, once again, it's time for an awakening at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9 with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We by Black.
WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. That are products that are produced by us. Go online and check out WeBuyBlack.com. Brother Bamani Tahemba, he is in Senegal and then later will be in Gambia. He'll be back, and when he comes back, we'll talk with Brother Bomonti and talk about that particular tour and upcoming tours where you can be a part of a trip of a lifetime, brother. It's just that simple. And it's not as expensive as you think. Go to the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Africa for the Africans, and not used with a K, it's with a C, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, and go to the website and check it out. Everything you need to make that trip happen is there. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Dr. Brinoco, Baba Brinoco, he has a number of things happening. He does have a tour upcoming, but he also has an event that is coming up very shortly, and that is going to be next week Friday, not just Friday, but next week Friday. Dr. Brinoco is talking at his presents authentic voices. He has a conversation with Samir Abbas. He's a Nubian, and they're going to talk about the history of the Nubians. You know, he had a conversation last time with Mama Mayina Bello, which turned out to be great. So check out that particular presentation. And then, of course, he has the tour July 18th through the 3rd, educational tour to Ghana. And that's going to be with Professor Small and Dr. Leonard Jeffries. And that is going to be July 18th through August 3rd. And then he'll probably be leaving that tour and then going to Kemet July 31st through August 13th. July 31st through August 13th, his trip to Kemet. And I think both of those trips are about 40, I think the Kemet trip is about 4,700. But we'll get to details, and I'll, of course, try to contact him so we can definitely talk about that. So I'll get him on the program real soon so we can talk about that. But go to Renoco, drrenoco.com, drrenoco.com. A lot of nice pictures, man, I'm telling you. We can take some good, you know, he's almost like a photojournalist aside from being a primary researcher and educator, like a photojournalist. Baba Brinoco, love him. Habesha. Habesha Incorporated. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. Remember, Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. They have sustainable, their mission, of course, is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habesha Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and Urban Green Jobs and Golden Growers. And, of course, the Kashi Project that has been going on in Kemet. And the buildings are up. They're doing the great work. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. The LEDGE Group. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. TheLEDGEGroup.com. Brothers, go to TheLEDGEGroup.com. Get the information for you can win a African safari. That's right. They have a raffle where you can win an African safari in Tanzania. The Tanzania African Safari. Also, too, you can buy land. If you are a member of LEDGE, which is $1,000, and you can buy an acre of land in Tanzania, to have a deal set up with the alleged group and the government of Tanzania for $250 an acre. $250 an acre. I mean, what can we say? Such a deal. $250 an acre. And of course, the alleged group deals with the four elements of human life: food, water, clothing, and shelter, establishing those things in the projects that they work on 12 different projects in six different countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. And you need to become a member of theledgegroup.com. Theledgegroup.com. The Saturday Seminar series of Bibi Atumi. BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to Bibi Atumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. BibiAtumi.com. Make it a favorite. Go there many times for shopping, all kinds of good stuff. And there's more than just BibiAtumi.com. There's Bibi Atumi TV. A number of things. And, I need to get somebody on from Bibi Atumi, man, because that would be great so we can talk about how important it is for all of us to become members. And it's, yeah, members, yeah. Sign up. Yeah. Get information. Well, their Saturday seminar service is this Saturday. And the topic is why Kemet matters. In fact, that's going to be talking about a lot this week, with the exception I'm going to talk about reparations with Baba Baruti this Friday. This Friday, that's right, my guest will be Baba Mwalimu Baruti. And we truly look forward to that. But why Kemet matters. Did you know that African people invented math, science, medicine, architecture, history, philosophy, politics, spirituality, warfare, and combat sciences, agricultural sciences, astronomy, culture, cosmology, literature, and other arts? Why were you not told of this information? In this talk, we will build on the work of the great scholars such as Dr. Shikanta Djop. You know, I can't talk about Dr. Djop enough. To begin to scratch the surface of the legacies of Kemet, land of the black people, and discuss the implications of the ongoing systematic and intentional disinformation campaign in the context of the theme, why Kemet matters. Why Kemet matters. In fact, as we're talking about it again today, ancient Kemet, because it does matter. It does matter. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy, across the street from the Soul Veg, down the street from Shrine of the Black Madonna, which the shrine is open on weekends, Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7. And at Wadada's, delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and healthy drinks and all kinds of good stuff on Saturdays. They have markets, they have pop-up markets and so forth. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia has the bookstore open. Check her out. In the Greenbrier Mall. If you cannot make it, but you're looking for some reading material or a specific book, give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The other bookstore that we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia. My good brother, Gazimde Ajamu. He has a, give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. The name of the program is called Dare to Win, and that's every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. The number you can call to listen or to ask questions or comments or have concerns is 929 477 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road, Forest Park, Georgia. It's inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's right. They have what you need. Give Sister Shelly Amonsetta a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Sister Gabby sent me a whole bunch of pictures once again. I love it. But she's doing outstanding work in the island of Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti, in the rural area. And, you know, Haiti is in a tough situation. So it is very vitally important that the brothers and sisters in Haiti get donations from us. And I'm quite sure the Haitians who can afford to are doing it. But, you know, we need help everywhere, don't we? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. This is, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, Sanjay-Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, Sanjay-Haiti. Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti, once again, Baba Baruti will be my guest on Friday. And can't wait to have that conversation. But if you want to support the work that he's doing, go to Akabin Institute. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute. Mail it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But you can use PayPal and Cash App. For the PayPal, the dollar sign, YAA, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make your donations monthly to support what they're doing. Okay. Also, too, he's a prolific writer, and his books are on sale at Akabin House, akabinhouse.com. Go to akabinhouse.com, and he has an array of books for sale. Okay. Where we at? Aha. The Enye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yesterday was April 4th. Of course, anytime you hear the date April 4th, you automatically, well, some of us do, automatically say April 4th, 1968, which is just like if I hear February 21st, you know, 1965, I, you know, remember Malcolm, and the day he was assassinated. April 4th, 1968 is the day that Martin was assassinated. And so we need to understand that these days of their birth and their death, especially for people of that stature in our lives, you know, need to be acknowledged. So April 4th, 1968. April 4th. The person who is not sure of himself should put down his weapons. Thomas Sankara, the great leader of Burkina Faso. Let's be real. If you're so weak that the constructive critique you receive from someone actually doing the work or their failure to consistently and continuously give you all of their attention turn you away from the warrior's path, then you had no heartfelt intentions to selfishly, uncompromisingly, valiantly stand as a self and ancestrally empowered example of what it means to be a frontline African anyway. Often, in our efforts to elevate everyone, we forget that it is in the nature of punks to be punks. They punk out. Affirm, I carry my weapons in confidence of my person and mission. Affirm, I carry my weapons in confidence of my purpose and mission. April 5th. Revolution is war, not romance. And war is an art, not a slow dance, but a skill which requires techniques, blueprints, and plans. Not some bullshit debate about whether I or overstand. I under or overstand. Wise intelligence. Not to say that it serves no purpose, but the ability to effectively argue against someone is not in and of itself evidence of warriorhood. In fact, it can be the exact opposite. A mastery at critiquing those who are trying their very best to accomplish their assigned nation-building work with whatever knowledge and resources they have at their disposal, while actually doing little to nothing for the community yourself, proves just the opposite. Has Edward Dankert, excuse me, I can't pronounce the name, reminds us, for some of us, arguing is a sport. Know that to debate with unequals, those who out of ignorance or willful treason defend our enemies against us, is to validate their argument. Besides, arguing with fools is not the mark of a master. A master would never debate with a neophyte. Masters know that neophytes do not yet know, and that the only way for them to learn is to quietly study those who do know. Affirm. Nothing any Rugo or mentalcidal minion says will cause me to lose my African balance and way by engaging in meaningless, distractive argumentation that takes me away from my work as a warrior. I am not on the front line to play with grown children. I'm going to say that again, as I always do. Affirm, nothing any Rugu or mentalcidal minion says will cause me to lose my African balance and way by engaging in meaningless, distractive argumentation that takes me away from my work as a warrior. I am not on the front line to play with grown children. Ashe. Ashe. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yeah, let me see what I'm doing here. Okay. I got a few things I'm going to do. Once again, this Saturday, Bibi Atumi, they have their Saturday seminar series. It is once again at 9 a.m. Eastern. First thing in the morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. 8 Central, 7 Mountain, or 6 Pacific, because it's 5 o'clock in Ghana. Well, it's not 5 o'clock, it's only 4 hours difference. 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock in Ghana. 9 o'clock here. And why Kemet matters. That's right, why Kemet matters. This Saturday to the 17th, the study, the association, the 37th Annual National Conference of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, ASCAC, the Classical African Worldview during post, and that's going to be very important. You know, they're going to, it's the ASCAC's Classical African Worldview during post-pandemic times, leaving footprints for the 21st century and eternity. That is going to be this Saturday. It is Eventbrite. So to register, put in ASCAC2021.eventbrite.com. It will work. ASCAC, ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, ASCAC, 2021.eventbrite.com. It's free, but, you know, we're looking for members, looking for elders who are members, elders who are not, who want to be members. So we're looking for all of those things. I'm going to talk about it more in depth on Wednesday's program. Like I said, Baba Barudi will be my guest on Friday. I'm excited about that. I'm excited about every program I'm able to do, believe me. Anytime I'm able to come on this mic and say some things, and I hope that, you know, the Spirit guides me and I say the things that are, you know, at least I know that are true. And I'm, once again, I don't give you my opinion. My opinion is profane, especially after all we've been through. It is deeply profane. So I give you the perspective of our scholars, our historians, men and women who, without foundation money or grant money, reclaimed, recaptured, and restored our history and presented it to us. Great men and women. Just right into my mind, Drusilla Dungy Houston came right into my mind. And that sister said, you know, she wrote the book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Great Kushite Empire. In 1926, the same year that Carter G. Woodson established African History Week, or Negro History Week, as they call it at that time. Same. And it was this. He said, our purpose, she said, out of ethnology, paleontology, archaeology, and all those other disciplines, she said, I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race and our culture can dare not refute. And the deepest part of the quote is this. She said, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? And still to this day, the so-called leadership we have, particularly the political leadership we have, are ignorant of the past. And the reason why many of us are so damn ignorant of the past is because we've been trained in these schools here in the West. We've been trained here in America, and we believe their scholarship. We believe what we see on TV. We don't go outside of ourselves to examine. So our purpose of ASCAC provides a body of knowledge, the purpose of ASCAC, that continuously contributes to the rescue, reconstruction, and restoration of African history and culture. Our purpose is to promote the study of African civilizations for the development of an African worldview. Our aim is to build the African-centered study groups and strengthen existing institutions. Our goal is to provide excellence in all dimensions of our association. Our strategy is to use our cumulative knowledge for the liberation of African people wherever they may be. Our commitment is to the truth. Our achievements and accomplishments will provide the resources necessary for ASCAC to grow and be recognized as a world-class African organization. I'm going to get off into some other things that are happening with that on Wednesday. We further talk about ASCAC on Wednesday. Yes. So, yeah. I'm going to have a couple of things on in the second hour of the program. I'm going to talk about the fact that Kemet is viewed as Caucasian. The face of Kemet is Caucasian. The face of Kemet, unfortunately, is white. They moved some, they have the new museum open in Cairo. And they had a beautiful, lavished, and elaborate parade of some of the mummies. I saw Amenhotep II. I saw Ramesses II. I saw Queen Hatshepsut's mummy. And they got them on these cars. In fact, I'll tell you that in the second half. So, but I want to play this right quick. Again, I played it before. I'll play it. This is, as I say, this is sad, but unfortunately true. on here.
Important historical facts. Underscore thinks seriously about THIS underscore. The black African, the wretched of the earth, is the only member of the human race who has been brainwashed to think that his ancestors bequeathed him with a curse that has prevented him from attaining aspired goals and life desires. Almost every misfortune he encounters on earth is the fault of some ancestors, who must be bound and cast with the fire of the Holy Ghost in the name of Jesus. The white people don't have terrible ancestors who have done terrible things. No. It's only the black ancestor. Over the years, the black ancestor has been so vilified by Christians they pay tithes, stay up all night, fast and pray to destroy the African ancestor in the name of Jesus. The black ancestor is so wicked he cursed his own kids. Having cursed his ancestor who gave him life, the black man is roaming around the world like a tortoise without a shell. He has no backbone. Zero identity. Thus no race respects him. He's lynched in Malaysia, incarcerated in Cambodia. He's shot like a dog in the streets of America. In Europe, he cleans the white man's shit. And they spit on him. Why won't they? A man who hates himself and despises his roots deserves no respect whatsoever. John Hawkins was a foremost English slave trader, a thief, and by contemporary moral standards, he can as well be called a terrorist. John Hawkins made three trips to West Africa in the 1560s and stole Africans whom he sold to the Spanish in America. On returning to England after the first trip, his profit was so handsome that Queen Elizabeth I became interested in directly participating in his next venture, and she provided for that purpose a ship named Jesus. Hawkins left with Jesus to steal some more Africans, and he returned to England with such dividends that Queen Elizabeth made him a knight. Hawkins chose as his coat of arms the representation of an African in chains. Today the generations of Hawkins and Queen Elizabeth I are alive and enjoying life from the proceeds of their evil ancestors. They don't demonize their ancestors despite their active involvement in the greatest evil humanity has ever witnessed. Both individuals sanction rape, kidnapping and mass murder, but their children don't bear ancestral curses like black Africans. You'd be hard-pressed to see a member of the British elite publicly denounce slavery. Isn't it time to emancipate yourself from mental slavery, O ye Negro? If ancestral curse exists, who should suffer from it? The ancestor who kidnapped and raped and murdered and pillaged and stole and enslaved his fellow man, or the man whose freedom was taken from him? Surely, the man who threw pregnant Negro women to sharks at sea because they were too weak, deserves his future generations to suffer, and not the man whose society was so pure they had no prisons to punish offenders. Do these black Africans who will go to church today binding and casting ancestral curses, know that almost all the top British politicians from the 17th century till the 19th century were proud slave merchants? It is on record that 15 Lord Mayors of London, 25 sheriffs, and 38 aldermen of the City of London were shareholders in the Royal Africa Company, RAC, between 1660 to 1690. The RAC alone was responsible for trafficking over 1.5 million Negroes to Britain and twice that number to the Caribbean. David and Alexander Barclays were active participants in the kidnapping and enslavement of millions of black Africans. As was standard practice at the time, the risky and long-term nature of transatlantic slave trading required new banking houses that could offer credits to prospective slave traders for periods of between 1.5 to 3 years. One bank that provided this service was run by Alexander and David Barclay. Their bank still carries their name. The Barclays Bank is also a proud sponsor of the English Premier League that me and you are fanatical fans of Chelsea and Arsenal and Man United today. Their children don't bind and cast their ancestral evil, rather it is the Negro whose ancestors were dehumanized and tortured and enslaved, that keeps praying against ancestral curses. The Bank of England was also involved in the slave trade. Sir Richard Neves, who was the director of the bank for 48 years, was also the chairman of the Society of West India Merchants. A group of vile men who stole Africans and made handsome profits by selling them onto farmers who needed them to work in their sugar and tobacco plantations in the West Indies. Today Liverpool Football Club will be playing Tottenham Hotspur in the Barclays Premier League. Pay attention. How many of you who are Liverpool supporters today know that the initial founders of that football club were retired slave traders, whom in 1892, with slavery outlawed, decided to invest their money in a football club that will reap future rewards for their generations to come via a bank called Arthur Haywood & Sons & Company. That bank would be absorbed in turn by the Bank of Liverpool, Martin's Bank, and Barclays Bank. You watch them and shout in ecstasy when they score. But a pastor somewhere will tell you the reason you're poor is because your ancestors committed evil, hence the reason you experience ill luck. And you will believe and start casting and binding rubbish. For your information, Liverpool was a major port for the transatlantic slave trade. Slave ships were often built or repaired in Liverpool. Nearly 1.5 million Africans were forcibly transported across the Atlantic in Liverpool ships. The Liverpool Merchant was the first recorded slave ship to sail from Liverpool. She set sail on October 3, 1699, and arrived in Barbados on September 18, 1700 with a cargo of 220 enslaved Africans. Part owner Sir Thomas Johnson is known as the founder of modern Liverpool. Liverpool City wouldn't be what it is today without the trade in black Africans. The personal and civic wealth gained from slaving cemented the foundations for the Liverpool's future growth. The children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the perpetrators of this monstrosity against the black man enjoy heaven here on earth and live in more stable environment. They have managed to stabilize their society and solve their problem and live in relative peace. But the Negro ancestors, the wretched of the earth, who was kidnapped and his freedom forcefully taken away from him, he was sentenced to a plantation for the rest of his life. It is this ancestor and bed many others who is demonized by Christians as having bequeathed their offsprings with curses. This is a historical fact our African brothers and sisters should be aware of. Africans unite, Shooting Star.
Africans unite. You know, when I listen to that, in fact, when I first heard it, somebody, I can't remember who sent it to me, you know, considering you know it's a Caucasian who is presenting this information and how he presents it, the black African, the wretched of the earth. You know, and this whole idea of being cursed, I remember watching a piece with Minister Farrakhan. It's talking about we are cursed, they believing in the Noah story, which I went over this past Friday. The Noah story, when Ham saw his father naked, and then Noah woke up from being drunk and found out what happened. Of course, he curses Ham black. And to be servants unto his brothers. You know, and the reality is none of that is historic and all of it is bull. We're not cursed. You know, and Farrakhan talking about, you know, our hair should not be close curl kinked, but our hair should be like the hair on our eyebrows. When he said that, it really got me. And I still have, you know, some love for Minister Louis Farrakhan and the work that he has done, you know, but it just really got me. And for many people who want to believe that we are cursed, we are not cursed. We're under a spell. We're under a spell perpetrated by Western society in their theology and their institutions. And praising them and wanting to believe any and everything that they present. But we're not cursed. Damn curse. And so therefore, because of this, we, you know, 678-678. Good morning. 678.
Good morning, Baba Oshie. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you this day?
I'm doing great, Baba. I'm doing great. I've been listening to you for a while, and I had some questions when you were talking about us being cursed.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that we're not cursed. But you also brought up about how you still have love for Farrakhan and what he's done for us. How are we supposed to look forward when we disagree with his stances now? Like, different leaders, we knew they did great things in the past, but, you know, at one time Nelson Mandela was fully for the people. Then later on in his life, I feel as though he was compromised. And that's the sentiments of a lot of hardcore revolutionaries.
And I agree.
I mean, how are we supposed to look at Farrakhan?
I agree with that.
How are we supposed to look at Farrakhan now?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a Pan-Africanist. I'm a cultural nationalist. I'm a sovereigntist. I believe in independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And if any leader comes under that framework, I'm willing to work with them. I agree with them. But if you're outside of that, even though you've done some things for our people, maybe you've done some things within this society that help bring programs to the community, healthcare, and so forth, you're always doing it in the context of us being American, you know? You're not doing it in the context for independence, and liberation, and self-determination, and sovereignty. You're doing it in a way that, yes, we too sing America, and we have these programs, and we've got some funding for this. We got a neighborhood improvement for that. We got a job building develop over here. And so I don't care about that. You know, sometimes I watch the programs and news and so forth, and I'm thinking to myself, I could give less than a rat's ass about this, you know, because what is of a deeper concern for me is the lives of our people and the quality of life for our people and our future. And our future. I mean, because especially when I look at, you know, you and your queen and your offspring, beautiful children, and I think about their future. What is that going to be?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so what we as brothers and sisters at this very moment have to do is prepare to develop that future for them that is different than what we all hoped for from years ago, when we just hoped that we could get into school, we could get a good job, we could move to a better neighborhood, we could go here and we can go there. We would be judged individually, judged by the content of our character and not the colors of our skin, you know? See? So, Minister Farrakhan, who is the minister of the Nation of Islam, and of course, many Muslims would disagree about the Nation of Islam, how Islam is practiced within it, and that's a debate and a fight for Muslims. You know, there's so many different sects of Muslims as well as Christians, more tons for Christians, you know, and so that's they debate, you know. Like I said, the only problem I have with that, and I love some of the things that Minister Farrakhan has done. I mean, he stood up. That's why I love Malcolm with the Nation of Islam, with Elijah Muhammad, when he stood up. But, of course, Elijah Muhammad was the first one to say that we were cursed. You know, that's written. It's written. But you there's a tape where you hear Minister Farrakhan say, we're cursed, you know. And to me, I'm adamant against that idea that we have been cursed. You know, we have unfortunately have fallen victim to the lies of Western society because we have been out of African influence for so long and then made to be ashamed of being African, made to be ashamed of Africa, you know. And this trichnology is so deep because we have all of the resources the world wants and the world can't do without, at least they think so, but they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it, Dr. John Henry Clark quote. And the reality is that is ours. We have everything that we need. We have land. We have resources. Everything that we need. But for the last 400, 500 years, we have been played. and we continue to get played. And of course, our ability to be effective. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, I kind of think Elijah, the Honorable Minister Elijah Muhammad, or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I believe he spoke what he felt was true. But I believe the source that he got it from was a corrupt source as well, because they want us to believe that we are cursed by the Creator, so we will accept this harsh treatment. We will accept this punishment that we're being given, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. under this so-called mm-hmm. curse that we are supposed to be under, you know what I mean, or been given to the Creator. So we will accept this oppression, accept this suppression, accept the murdering and the killing, and we feel as though this is just something that we have to go through because of whatever we did wrong to be cursed.
But then
that's where it has to be corrected.
Yeah, but then the question becomes, how do we lift this curse? Is this eternal? It surely appears as mm-hmm. such, doesn't it? Is this eternal?
Yeah,
The bottom line is to kick the curse to the curb,
yes.
And to begin to believe in ourselves and believe in one another and believe to, you know, join hands. I mean, one of the things that I've always loved about the final call, but more importantly, Muhammad speaks. From back in the day, on the ending page, the last page, they have that brother from Africa reaching across the Atlantic, joining hands with the brother from America. You know, I've always loved that image. And I know you always like images. I always loved that image, you know, because that's what's necessary. I remember going to the NAACP convention in 1980 when I was vice president of the NAACP. But anyway, went to the convention in 1980 when Ronald Reagan's running for president. And, of course, he spoke at the convention. But Jimmy Carter's Jimmy Carter's attorney general, Ben Civiletti, was in attendance and at a workshop. And so I was at this workshop, and I had just read where the national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, had stated that we will do any and everything possible to disrupt any unity between Africans on a continent and Africans in the diaspora, specifically Africans in America. Because the reality is that Africans in America are some of the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet. And if Africans on the continent and Africans in America and other parts of the diaspora can hook up, and then bam, it's over. It's over for Europeans manipulating us and taking us for granted. And abusing us and taking our resources for nothing, you see, and that's what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. What we just talked about, dear brother, the only way that we can break that is for Africans to unite. That's why the Pan-African Federalist Movement is so important. Africa needs to unite. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't give a damn if it's not that organization, some organization, any organization, or hell, by divine intervention, if that's possible, that we come together and unite. That's what we need.
Functional
unity.
That's what made, and that's what made Malcolm such a target. Because once he broke away from the confines of the Nation of Islam, he started uniting African nations with Africans that had like-minded thinking over here in America, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That were exposing the corruption, that were exposing the exploitation, exposing the criminal behavior and evil deeds being done, you know what I mean, to Africans globally as well as in the continent as well as in America.
Right.
And when they started uniting, he became a real big threat, and they said, we got to take him out.
That's right. That's right. We got to take him out. And so the Nation of Islam had created the atmosphere by which that could easily happen. And of course, to this very day, everybody believes that the Nation of Islam, the United States government, had nothing to do with it. That, you know, the United States government had nothing to do with Dr. King's murder or anything like that. But of course, all of those were proven in court that they did, you know, that this government did. But yet and still, you know, there was a brother did a good documentary that was on Netflix, Who Killed Malcolm X. The brother did some serious research, you know, and what happened, is that there were some members of the Newark Mosque, two new members, and then one that they knew that's the brother that did it, because he's the one that had a trench coat and had a shotgun, and the other three, you know, went to prison, and and one's license, because he told him, I did not do this, you know. But once again, man, this is what we're faced with, brother, you know. And so we need to strengthen one another, begin to believe in one another. We need families. We need our men and our women together. Yes. We need our children learning about who they are and what our future entails and what they definitely can become. We need truth in our lives. You know, I know that some of us believe that through the theologies that are there, we can find some way to unify. Unfortunately, I disagree. You know, I know the brothers and sisters at the Shrine of the Black Madonna and other liberation theology churches that are here, like Sankofa, like here in the Atlanta area and other parts of this country, maybe elsewhere, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact is that Christianity promotes, you know, it doesn't promote, and it doesn't even promote good family life, but Christianity promotes that you as an individual can be saved. This past Sunday was the greatest, of course, is the greatest day in Christianity, resurrection, because the whole thing is built and based on the death and resurrection of Christ for your salvation. And so many of us believe in that so deeply, you know, not understanding that it prevents us from unifying, because what you believe, you know, all the other lies about ourselves, it prevents us from reaching over and reaching in front and grabbing that brother and sister and working with them, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, my brother, I'm going to take a break. So you stick around, okay? You stick around. Peace, my brother.
You definitely. Okay, I appreciate you, Baba.
Yeah, okay, I'll beat you. I'm putting you on hold. Okay. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The lineup that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, of course, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times I'm going to give are Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Muia Kamban and Ataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisi Y. Ayan. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. on Friday, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And on Saturdays, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Bibiatumi, Abibitumi.com, Bibiatumi.com. I mentioned the Saturday seminar series, and I gave the wrong number. This Saturday, all of them are important, of course, but they're talking about why Kemet matters. Why Kemet matters. And that is at 1 o'clock. I apologize. It is at 1 Eastern time. At 1 Eastern time this Saturday, the 10th. Okay? And we're going to continue this conversation on Kemet. Once again, we'll talk about Ask CAC this coming Wednesday. And then on Friday, Baba Mawali Mumbaruti will be our guest here on African Perspectives. Some of you might have seen it on the news. I got a glimpse of it. I was a little late on it. But they're opening the new museum in Egypt. And so to take the mummies that they've had at that museum and take them to their new place, they even built a road because they don't want anything. They got cars with serious suspension on. They wanted to be, this is a smooth ride. And to put them in their resting place because of the delicacy. In fact, they're not even exposed to air. They're in a hyperbaric chamber. So just, you know, in case some atmosphere, you know, wind blows. So just, it's that deep. And that's deep, you know. I know this past Saturday, of course, as it is, as a tradition of the Easter celebration, they played the Ten Commandments movie, the one with Charlton Heston as Moses and Yul Brynner as Ramesses and Ramesses II. In fact, when they were talking about it this morning, they were like, yeah, I saw a little bit of Amenhotep the second's, his coffin or his mummy being transported, Queen Hatshepsut, and Ramesses. There were some others that I don't know, but and they said Ramesses is, you know, because see, people believe the story. People, you are trained to believe the Bible is a history book. The Bible is not a history book. It is not. What is in the good stories? Some could be good stories, good moral stories, I guess. I don't know. But it ain't for us. But we wanted to take that and make it for us. Well, damn it, take the damn book, take the stuff that's good that you think is for us, and get rid of all that other sugar, honey, iced tea. Make me cuss up in this mug. And so, now that they got this new museum open, and of course, they want a whole bunch of people to come. They want the world to come. And as they presented it, all the people look Caucasian. And they look at the people of today of Egypt. Because, you know, Kemet's culture was so strong. And we're going to learn a lot about that. We're going to talk about ASCAC on Wednesday and the conference they have coming up on Wednesday. But it was so strong that, you know, people, when they came up into Kemet, they were awestruck. Can you imagine? And I also, too, I think I gave you that information on Kemet and how they did things. I'm going to give you that information again coming up on Wednesday, because that three-hour video is deep. Because I've worked with young people, and I've told them that, yeah, you know, they studied everything. Everything was born out of study, which is true. These things, so many things I'm saying are definitely true, you know. And so when the river inundated, supposedly that's when they went south, which is upriver, because the river flows from south to north. So they went up the river to these areas and quarried the stone and dragged the stone and put the stone on a barge and then sailed it downriver to wherever they were building a pyramid. And now that's become not the case. And we'll talk more about that. That's deep, you know. But the thing was that, you know, I told the young people the glory of it is that we did it, that it was ours, that it was African, and that everybody who came into there marveled and wanted to be like, even when the Greeks, even the Hyksos, the first invasion, successful invasion of Kemet, the culture never changed because the culture was strong. It never changed. They got rid of the brothers and sisters from the south, from Nubian, from Kush, came and kicked them out and reestablished. And then our last great walk in the sun was Pihanki and Taharqa and them, and 25th dynasty. And then we had a few more dynasties after that. And then Alexander the so-called great, who came to ancient Kemet and studied at our feet. Literally. Then they came back as conquerors. Alexander the so-called great. And then, of course, even when he died, he didn't want to go back to Greece. And even Socrates, you know, Socrates, he goes back to Greece with all these ideas. They made his ass drink poison. They made him drink hemlock. Plato saw what was going on and he disappears. He studies at the feet of Africa. It's in George G.M. James' book, Stolen Legacy. And then, of course, Aristotle, who was the philosopher at the time of Alexander, was a tremendous thief, a great pillagerer. They wanted to be like us. So the Ptolemies ruled for like 300 years. And there is some writings and there is some Medunetur, or what they called hieroglyphs, with European looking paintings because of their taking over of ancient Kemet. And then, of course, Cleopatra the VII, she wanted to maintain it and be for Kemet. Well, of course, that didn't happen after Julius Caesar was killed because of his foolishness, not believing the soothsayers who told him, hey, dude, beware of the Ides of March. They ain't feeling you up in the Senate. But he ignored the soothsayers, and he went up in the Senate, and he got killed by Cassius and Brutus. And then, of course, she dealt with Mark Antony, and that didn't work because Octavian, Augustus Caesar, he took over. And the culture was still strong. The culture was eliminated when Islam came on the scene, when Islam went from east to west, from the Arabian Peninsula all the way across to West Africa, Mauritania, Algeria, Libya, Tunisia, Egypt. That's when the culture changed. And they had no respect for it. In fact, from what I understand, an earthquake hit at one time, shaking some of the limestone coverings, because what you see today, the pyramids did not look like that back in that time. They were smooth limestone. And they just, serious bling when the sunlight hit them during the morning rise, or even probably during the midday when the sun's at its highest point. And so, you know, they wanted to be like us. And then when it changed, and then, of course, all the lies began to happen and we began to be erased in terms of our involvement. That's why ASCAC is an important organization. That's why African historians are important individuals to reclaim, recapture, and restore this history that is so vitally important. And so they have this caravan. I'll take your calls in a second, so just hold on, family. Kemet mummies passed through Cairo in ancient rulers' parade. Kemet has been witnessing a historic procession of their country's ancient rulers through the capital city of Cairo. The lavish multi-million-dollar spectacle saw 22 mummies, 18 kings and 4 queens, transported from the perch-colored neoclassical Egyptian museum to their new resting place, which is 3 miles away. With tight security arrangement befitting their royal blood and status as national treasures, the mummies were relocated to the new National Museum of Kemetic Civilization in what is called the Pharaoh's Golden Parade. They were transported with great fanfare in chronological order of their reigns from the 17th dynastic ruler, Thoth the Second, to Ramesses the Ninth, who reigned in the 12th century BCE. Kemet has experienced a sharp rise in COVID-19 infections a year ago, but following a decline in the number of cases and deaths, restrictions on open air gatherings were later lifted. One of the main attractions of Saturday's event is King Ramesses II, the most famous pharaoh of the New Kingdom, who ruled for 67 years and is remembered for signing the first known peace treaty. That's right, he signed the first known peace treaty. Another is Queen Hatshepsut, or foremost of noble ladies. So she ruled as a pharaoh. She was Queen Hatshepsut, but she ruled as king. For 21 years, she became ruler, even though the customs of her time were that women did not become pharaohs. Each mummy was carried on a decorative vehicle fitted with special shock absorbers and surrounded by a motorcade, including replica horse-drawn war chariots. While ancient mummification techniques originally preserved the pharaohs for the move, they have been placed in special nitrogen-filled boxes to help protect them against external conditions. Roads along the route have been repaved to keep the journey smooth. The Minister of Tourism and Antiquities has done its best to make sure that the mummies have been stabilized, conserved, and are packed in a climate-controlled environment, says Salam, the professor of Egyptology at the American University in Cairo. The mummies were discovered in 1881 and 1898 in two caches in the ruins of Waset. They call it Thebes. It was the actual name is Waset, in Kemet's ancient capital. And then modern day Luxor, Ipetisut, in Upper Kemet. They have already seen a lot of movement in Cairo, and before that in Ipetisut, where they were moved from their own tombs to other places for safety. While most of the ancient rulers' remains were brought from Waset to Cairo via boat on the Nile, a few were transported in first-class carriages on a train. They were housed in the iconic Egyptian Museum and visited by tourists from around the world for the past century. The Valley of the Kings and Queens, Kemet's authorities are hoping that the new museum, which opens fully this month, will help revitalize tourism, a prime source of foreign currency for the country. The industry has been battered by political turbulence over the past decade and more recently by the pandemic. You know, the chariots that they had them on, they looked like chariots. Actually, they looked like, they were cool. Anyway, Saturday's move of the mummies will be streamed online for all enthusiasts of ancient Kemet to watch. The new exhibits will now be housed in the Royal Hall of Mummies and will go on display to the general public on the 18th of this month. The hall has been designed so that the visitors will experience the illusion of being in the Valley of the Kings in Waset. Separately, a new grand museum, which will house the famous Tutankhamun collection, is due to open next year close to the Great Pyramids at Giza. While the curse of the pharaohs, right? While it is being seen as a grand and even fun event, Kemet's mummies have historically been associated with superstition and foreboding. Recently, Kemet had a string of disasters. Last week alone, dozens of people were killed in a train crash in Upper Kemet, while at least 18 died when a building collapsed in Cairo. Then, as preparation were in full swing to transfer the mummies, the Suez Canal was blocked. That's right. Remember that freighter? That cargo ship blocked the Suez Canal for over a week. Social media users have questioned whether the myth of the curse might be to blame. The ethics of displaying ancient Kemetic mummies has long been debated. Many Muslim scholars believe that the dead should be treated with dignity and respect and not be exhibited as curiosities. In 1980, Anwar Sadat, who was president of Egypt, ordered the royal mummy room at the Egyptian Museum closed, arguing that it desecrated the dead. He wanted the mummies to be reburied instead, although he did not get his wish. That's money. That's just like in the Arab Spring, all that was happening. Because remember, they put Hosni Mubarak, who was after Anwar Sadat, they were going to get him and all the things that were happening. Well, a human chain was around the museum. They wanted to let you know, you ain't tearing this up. This ain't going to be like some stuff in Iraq. You ain't tearing this up. This is our money. So all of these things that are literally thousands of years old, you're not going to come up here and destroy this. That ain't happening. A human chain around that museum. Yeah. So there that is. We got some few folks. If you want to join this conversation, please, a few folks that are in the queue, hit star twice. Hit star twice, you could join the conversation. 646-646, good afternoon.
Odios, what's happening, brother?
Hey, Jay, how are you today? Good.
I'm hanging in there, man. You know, same old. Same old, same old, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing changes that much, you know. Just the sickle fins getting sicker. And, you know, that's it, man. That's it. You know, yeah. I mean... It is what it is. How was your weekend, man?
It was good, brother. It was good. You know, my weekends, you know, are dealing with basketball. This week, hopefully, we got a break, and I hope we don't have any games on this weekend. And even if we do, somebody else gonna go because I'm tired.
I love supporting my grandson. You gotta get your rest, man. You gotta have time to sit back and chill. And just deal, man. But you know, I wanted to ask you something right quick about your state. all of this madness going on with the most dangerous Stacey Abrams and her pandering to these corporations and things of this nature, and keeping black folks in line. You know, everybody loves that sister, but when you put her into total context, she's a dangerous woman, man. She's dangerous in the sense that she wants to really be a part of whiteness.
Yeah, she has
and
a
protect
yeah.
whiteness yeah. at all costs.
Well, I mean,
at
you
the expense
can
of African people.
Well, you can put it like that, Jay, and that's a good way to put it, as far as I'm concerned as well. You know, but what others would say is that, because see, she was against the boycott of or having the All-Star game, the baseball All-Star game that was supposed to be scheduled here in Atlanta to be moved to someplace else because of the tens of millions of dollars. And the mayor stated that as well, just only that the loss of tens of millions of dollars, you know, to the city. But she was in favor, the mayor was, Keisha Lance Bottoms, she was in favor of those who want to boycott and those who want to withhold and so forth because of what the state legislation has done in acting these new voting regulations, these voting restrictions. This basically is, you know, voter suppression. And Stacey Abrams understands that too. But, you know, you're right. You know, she gets corporate money. She's looking for corporate money.
No question. It that made her a very rich woman. See, the thing is this, O, and this is where we as a people always get played, and this is what I was saying in regards to boycott to Elliot and to Richard a week or so ago. The deal is that, yeah, you can boycott somebody, but if you boycott them and your institution don't benefit from it, it ain't really nothing of gain. Because when it's all said and done, because of how sick we are as a people, we're just going to go right back to business as usual. And then our entity is going to suffer because somebody got to pay the piper. And more than likely, it's going to be the black institution that's going to get the feedback. The fight back, the pushback. You see, the reality is this. If these corporations really gave a damn about your black ass, they would have took care of business when the word was out on what the bill was going to be and what they were trying to do. Then they wanted to put pressure on the legislature before they passed
yeah,
the bill.
Yeah, and you're right. Do you think that
Kemp is gonna repeal the bill? Hell no!
No, they're not.
Repeal the bill because he know he can outlast the so-called pressure.
Right.
Because let's be very clear, the pressure is only a statement. Who give a f about a statement? And that's the thing that we fall for all the time. We never put pressure on the corporation while the bill is being legislated to shut it down, for them to come out and say, well, there's going to be consequences and repercussions if you pass the bill. We wait till it's passed, and then we accept the pandering by the thief to be able to continue to rob our black ass, and we think that the thief is doing something. I mean, it's just the ignorance and stupidity that goes along with the game, because that's all it really is a game. You know what I mean? Because Kemp is not going to change the law. Business is going to go on as usual after a few weeks or a month or two of the pushback. And when it's all said and done, the corporation is going to still be deemed as a friend.
Right.
It's just some of the most slickest bullshit in the world. And we fall for it every time like a sickle fin dummies that we behave like. I mean, it's crazy. It's just why I always say our people are on remote control.
Yeah.
That's all we are, remote control, reactionary people, episodic beings, that whenever there's any sort of episode you know, we didn't come into action. But before that, we never look at what's being done, address it at that time, put the pressure on the necessary people that need to be pressured on. We just wait till it's all said and done and didn't expect those that we should have put pressure on from the beginning to get those that do to change what they do. Damn, that sounds like a beautiful rhyme.
Yeah, that flowed, brother. You had some good flow there, Jay.
Yeah, that was a good one. It sounds like an Isley Brothers song, I think. But you know, in all reality, they're not gonna repeal the law. They're not gonna do anything. They're willing to take a little bit of economic pressure to be able to go along about their business. And Stacey Abrams is still gonna figure out how she could get that money and be the so-called darling in the spokesperson of the people. Man, it's a masterful game.
Yeah, that's true. But one of the things she definitely wants to make sure happens is that she is able to,
keep her position.
Yeah, well, not just keep her position, dealing with the laws that are being enacted across this country in various states. She wants to squash those because those are truly, by design, suppressive laws. They're designed to suppress the votes, especially of us, you know?
Yeah, but that's all true. No ifs, ands, and buts about that, O. But the reality is this. You're supposed to put together a fight before it goes into play, instead of after it go into play. This shit had all been put forward months ago. Because, you know, the funny thing is, Bubblehead Martin, he said that they was going to do this. And unfortunately, this is one of the times when Bubblehead No Neck Martin nobody listened to. Now, if you know anything about the history of how these Republicans get down, just based alone from what they did in North Carolina like a year ago, you should have didn't know it was coming.
Right. I agree with that. You know,
the thing is, why are we not formulating a strategic plan to, if you talking about boycotting, doing it on a level to whereas these people got to pay the piper. That's the thing that I try to understand, that I want to understand, because I'm just not getting it, though. I'm just not getting what these people doing. But then again, I know they love the system so much, they want to be a part of the system so much, and they want to be in a certain position that they really not going to jeopardize it. You know what I mean? Now, I say it like this. If what you call them is a master organizer, LaTosha Brown and the rest of them, why ain't they organizing in the right way to liberate African people but to get in the bed with the goddamn devil? To be overseen, to be manipulated and maneuvered to continuously do what? Now, if they such great organizers, why don't the hell you organize for the liberation and the growth of African people?
Not because it is always the Caucasian wants
you
to
all,
they love it, and they want you to chase them. Chase my, you know, they want you to consistently, you never overcome them. You'll never truly be integrated. But as long as I got you wanting what I got, you know, I got you. As long as I got you wanting what I got you. You know, because I keep going.
Give the people what they want.
Yep, because I'll throw you some crumbs periodically.
Yeah.
You know? So I ain't going to constantly deny you, because in order for me to keep you in trap, I got to constantly throw these crumbs out to you. See? And then you go for that, you know, and then you chill for a minute because you'd be happy. Then, of course, you know, the next thing I do, just like you said, they should have known these bills were coming, and they should have fought these bills in all of these state houses. And then say it is a
coordinated, even though they have these so-called states' rights. This is a national coordination of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party can't win straight up with ideas. They can't.
So that's how you should be organizing. You should be organizing boycotts to do two things: to get out there and vote and punish those who disbehave. Now, all it boils down to is the key thing that white folks do better than anybody: control the narrative. Yeah. If you learn how to control the narrative, then you're the one who
But see,
who's the piper?
Okay, but see, though, Jay, the thing is this: the narrative can't be within their system because it is theirs. So we can't control the narrative in their system. We have to control the narrative in our system. And our problem is we're too afraid. There's a serious fear factor within us that prevents us from wanting to separate, get away from, or do things independently of our own.
We don't want to do anything to offend the white man. I can't use my words that I hear like you. To.
I know. We all know.
We can't do anything to offend the European, the white man, the daddy, the no good.
Yep.
Listen, the reality is this, yo. This is the reality. Until you control the narrative and you set forward the agenda and you get your people to follow the agenda, the white man is going to do whatever he want to do. That's why he got us on remote control. So now he'll make a response, and the response will be for a short period of time, and then it's back to business as usual.
Yeah.
So the corporation is just basically semi-pandering to your black behind, because you ain't even intelligent to know that you being pandered to, played, and mentally masturbated on. Hey, we in a real sick position,
we
man.
Very are.
I mean, look at the narrative for getting people to take a vaccine that got
we don't know what's all it is. This was, you know, these vaccines are supposed to be different than what it was previously when they had human tissues in them. They had actual virus in them.
Man.
So, no, listen, Jay. I don't know. And you know what?
Tell you, they got human tissue.
You
know? They got chimpanzee waste, and they got all sorts of other sugar, honey, ice tea
okay.
in it. And you go fall for it because somebody done told you, and you done seen some sick Negro who you love and worship taking that vaccine.
Yeah.
Like I told you, there's only one person, one or two people in this country. If I see them take the vaccination, then I may think about it. But then again, I say that illegal alien got their ass. That's the only way I can see it. Now imagine somebody like Baba Baruti saying, "I'm taking the vaccination," with all that he know about the white man.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm being generous in what I'm saying. The European. Just imagine it. Then my brother Kitty, with all all he said about the vaccination, all of the research that he done, even though it just shows you how the white man control you, he done had to back down and slow down about what he's saying about the vaccination and things of that nature, because he know that the daddy shut him down on YouTube like they did the great Minister of Wellness.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes to show that you being manipulated. If you don't see that, then, I mean, don't they always talk about should be a debate?
Well, see, that's the thing.
Don't they always say that there should be counterbalance?
But no, they may say that. They don't mean that. The bottom line is, this is about dictatorship, and you know it. And so, therefore, they are dictating to this population that you better take this vaccine. You know? We're trying to get to herd immunity. And the only way to get to herd immunity is that when about three-fourths
or the population that's supposed to be vaccine is vaccinated. And then the other one-fourth will come through to get vaccinated as well. So the whole population is vaccinated. That's what they're talking about. Yeah, right. Well, listen, I'm going to take another call. Jay, you hold on, okay?
Yes,
put you on
please,
hold, dear brother.
Please.
All right. All right. 602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Marcus. How are you?
I'm doing great, brother.
Good.
You know, when I saw that article, you know, I said, man, you know, that one with what happened in Egypt, you know, and mm-hmm. say how those Arabs, but, you know, this things like these, you know, we our scholars should be raising their voice now because we, you know, when they make moves like this, you know, our scholars should, because that we could easily show that those Arabs are no way historically tied to those artifacts that they moved.
No, and they know it.
They came to Africa. Those artifacts were way before them.
You know, when I went,
Africa fierce, and none of them,
well, let me say this: they've been here. They've been there for hundreds of years. And a lot of the things were under sand. In fact, Hori Maket, or what the Greeks call a sphinx, was under sand. The only thing that was visible was its head. Its body was under sand. And there was other tombs and so forth that were sand over. And, of course, in the last, I'd say, 100-some years, they've been cleaned out, dug out, and so forth. And people are excavating, even as we speak. I know Anthony Browder, he's been doing some excavations in the south actually it's north of Aswan, the dam that was built there in Aswan to develop Lake Nasser and to have Abu Simbel moved from its previous location to the present location. And the moving of that was deep because they had to cut it up. They cut it up like a jigsaw puzzle and put it back to where you see it today. And Abu Simbel is a marvel. It is a wonder, you know. And the deal is, and I say this about Abu Simbel, Brother Marcus, where it was initially built, twice a year, the sun would rise and penetrate through that building and illuminate the Holy of Holies. They engineered that so perfectly that it would do that. Well, it can't do it now because it's a different location, you know. And so the argument could be, was the engineering feat done in the 20th century when they cut it up and replaced it where it is? Or was the engineering feat that was done 3,000 or 4,000 years ago to build it, and that twice a year the sun would illuminate the temple?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
When I was in college and studying in the math, and they always telling me about the Pythagorean theorem. But when I look in that book that she can't deal civilization or barbarism, I see the theorem there.
Yes.
Before Pythagoras. So again, that is stolen. They keep stealing our legacy.
Yes.
Just like all these Egyptians are doing what they're doing now. Again,
yes.
Stealing, pimping our legacy. Because that is our people there, that is African people, but nothing about African people there. So it's terrible, but
there have been symposiums about questions of history, questions that are being dealt with from a factual standpoint, or even from a religious standpoint, which is not historical, but those things have been debated. And if you don't come with that evidence that can be corroborated, evidence that can be proven beyond doubt, then your hypothesis is out the door. That's why I'm saying, that's why religion does not stand up to that. They don't stand up to that kind of scrutiny. They prove that the Exodus, the movie I just watched this past weekend, the Ten Commandments, that didn't happen. In fact, there ain't no damn Moses. There were no damn Moses. That those things did not happen. Okay? Now, there was a symposium in Cairo in 74. Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, along with an assist, along with a contemporary, a brother named Dr. Theophilo Binga, who I've met because he's an ASCAC member. I've been a member of ASCAC since the 90s, early 90s. And they, those two men, who we, I believe, and say, owe a great debt of gratitude because they argued persuasively that the ancient Kemetic people or ancient Egyptians were African, were black. He said, and Diop said, I can prove to you 10 ways. Not only the phenotype, skeletal remains and so forth, but the smoking gun was the melanin dosage test. He could extract the melanin from the mummies to determine, proving that they were black Africans. This documentary I mentioned earlier, it's about a three-hour documentary on ancient Kemet and pyramid building. They state unequivocally, undeniably, that they were Africans. Well, of course they were, because you couldn't work out in the damn sun, that hot-ass sun like that, if you were not African, if your skin was not dark. Because even the present... this lady, she was talking about that, you know, but she was always out in the sun with an umbrella, you know, for shade. Because, no, they can't take it. They lack it. And because of their lacking of it, that sun could cause skin cancer. That sun could do serious damage. That sun would have you looking like you 80 when you're only 35. More wrinkles than you have more wrinkles than an elephant's ass.
Yeah, it shrinkles. Yeah, with them, it dries them up.
Yes.
But with us, it hits our skin produce them oils, you know, and we just thrive in the sun. But yes. Them, you know, they just shrivel up, you know. So nature is against them.
Yes. So the truth is there. Brother,
you take it easy, brother.
All right. Thank you, brother Marcus. Appreciate you always, brother. Peace. All right. Yeah. We only got a few more minutes left. Anybody else want to jump in, hit star twice, or dial 215. We had a bunch of people that began to leave me, but 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, you know. And I've seen Dr. Awas. Dr. Awas used to be the main person of antiquities in Kemet. I'm not sure exactly what all happened, but he ain't no more. But Dr. Wass wanted to say that the ancient Kemet was also multi-ethnic or multi-general or whatever. He did not. 334, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I'm sorry to be on and off.
No, man, you at work, man. Shoot, I appreciate it any time you get a chance to call, man. I love it. How you been? Brother Lusk?
You know, I've been trying to get myself together physically, and so I'm trying to look into plant-based diet.
Right on.
Dieting.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things I'm kind of on and off, because to get people calling me, as well as I'm at work, eagle-eyeing my work and stuff. But other than that, though, just wanted to touch base with you and let you know I do support you, sir. And hopefully there's some time I can get to hear a good, whole, solid program like I once did. So
okay, hope that's soon. Well, hope you can Friday. Yeah. We hope you can Friday. We got Baba Baruti on Friday. Molly Mubiri
very
on
good.
Friday.
Very
and
good.
Then on Wednesday, I'm going to talk about ASCAC because they have a conference coming up this weekend that is going to last that time. So, yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I understand that there is a conference, and we'll definitely tune in for that.
Okay.
Looks like a whole solid week of good and solid information.
Yeah.
Well, listen, in order to get that ASCAC, just put in, you know, association, the letters, you know, Association of Study of Classical African Civilizations, ASCAC, just ASCAC.eventbrite.com. ASCAC.eventbrite.com. You know, and then the conference is free, but if you're a member or like, you know, or elder, it's like $50 for a regular membership and $25 for elders. If you want a regular membership, renew your membership, or if you just starting to be a member as an elder. And I think that we use elders as 55 and over, you know.
Got you.
So, yeah, check that out.
It's a good investment. I'm sure it's a good investment.
Oh, yeah. And then pretty soon, man, we'll probably be going around, you know, when we're able to now meet collectively, you know, going to various cities and, of course, maybe even go back to Kemet, especially for something dynamic. I miss the one in 80. I think it was 86. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, where about 2,000 of us descended on Egypt. Descended on Kemet.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I really would love you when I was on and you were mentioning the different dynasties and mentioning the things that was going on in Kemet. There's one place I would really love to have gone to and witnessed this myself. It's the temple where you could literally see the sun pass through the wall, pass through the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? I think it's
Abu Simbel. I just mentioned that.
Abu Simbel, that's right.
Yeah.
I would really like to witness that with the rising of the sun and the going to a zenith, and it's actually shining into that temple and back out.
Let me say this, because I don't think that it does it today. If it does, I'm not sure. But it did where it was at its previous location. The fact that they created the Aswan Dam, and that flooded Nubia, creating Lake Nasser. And so they had to cut up Abu Simbel. And that was a shrine to Ramesses II and his wife, you know, Nefertiti.
Yeah.
You know, and so they have Abu Simbel, the three, you know, huge figures of Ramesses, and then the door. And twice a year, the sun would rise at a point, and just as you say, penetrate all the way in through this corridor and illuminate the Holy of Holies, illuminate the altar at the end. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you know, that's to me is just an engineering marvel, an engineering feat that's unparalleled at the time that they did it. You know. So yeah.
Well, very good.
All right, brother.
As always, all the best to you, brother.
You too.
And supporting you from this on the other side of the state line from you. So,
all right, my brother.
We'll be talking.
All right. Peace to you, brother. Thank you.
Peace to you, too. Peace.
All right. We in this program, like we in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vahodie. Bibi Vahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, and I hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.